Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Unfortunately, this week's program is again about the whole COVID-19 situation, the vaccines, the masks, the mandates. You know, call it hysteria, call it a reaction, call it a movement. If you're like me, you're tired of the whole thing, but it's the lead story every night. And for Christians, the whole event is a great teachable moment. We should be learning the lessons God plans for us to learn in current political social events. Case in point, Old Testament historic books, Samuel, Chronicles, Kings. The spiritual lessons were all couched in national events, wars, plagues, famines, kings. And as Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, about discerning current happenings, how is it that you know how to forecast the weather, but don't discern the signs of the time? We ought to be discerning the signs of the time. I'd like to begin with three stories. First, the story I shared last week, Jessica Wilson in Seattle, a healthy 37-year-old mother of two young children. She took the J&J vaccine and died from heart inflammation and blood clots brought on by the vaccine. She was reluctant to take the shot, but the state mandated it if she was going to be a helper in her daughter's classroom. The second story, last week, another one of the many breakthrough cases, Sean Kuhn, a fully vaccinated 21-year-old student at the University of Georgia, died of COVID-19-induced respiratory infection. Sean was a senior studying exercise and sports science. He was in excellent shape, but died of COVID. Third story, Josh Tidmore and his wife, Christina, in Alabama. They were healthy. They're in their 30s. Christina and Josh figured that they were at low risk of COVID-19, and with conflicting viewpoints filling their social media feeds and social circles, they decided to wait on getting vaccinated. On July 20th, Josh came home from work with a slight cough. He initially thought it was sinus trouble. 21 days later, he died of COVID-19 at North Alabama Hospital. He leaves behind a wife and three young children. So, three stories, three young adults. One died from taking the vaccine. One died from COVID having taken the vaccine, and one died from COVID not having taken the vaccine. Although the death rate from COVID is less than 1%, and most of those deaths occur in people who already had other fatal illnesses, people are still dying of COVID. About 700,000 in the United States. You know, take out the precondition factor. It may be less than that, but that's still a lot of people. By way of review, my lesson last week was about Christian opposition to this philosophy of utilitarianism. The greatest good for the greatest number of people. The ends justify the means. This pagan ideology is driving COVID policy here in our nation. That it's acceptable for 17,000 people to die of the vaccine in order to allegedly save 300,000 or 400,000 people who might die from COVID otherwise. In the words of the FDA, it's an acceptable risk. And again, to be clear and accurate, the CDC has reported that 17,000 Americans have died from complications related to the vaccine. And about 25,000 were disabled. Now, this number is coming from doctors who have determined that these deaths were related to the vaccines and have taken the time to fill out the forms and submit them to the CDC. Here's a chart of the adverse reactions to the vaccine. These are the numbers at the beginning of October. 16,310 deaths, 75,605 hospitalizations, 87,814 urgent care visits, 121,000 doctor office visits after taking the vaccine. And if you total up other serious effects, there is about 25,000 permanently disabled. Like the pro tennis player, Jeremy Chardy, who took the vaccine and it resulted in so many medical problems, it ended his tennis career. Chardy said, "I cannot practice, I cannot play. I regret taking the COVID vaccine after feeling violent pain." And like NBA player Brandon Goodwin with the Atlanta Hawks, the vaccine resulted in blood clots that ended his basketball career. Quote from Goodwin, "I got sick. I never quite recovered from it. I had back pain. I was super tired in the games. I couldn't run up and down the court. I was fine until I took the vaccine. I was fine. People kept trying to tell me, no, it's not the vaccine. How do you know? You don't know. Well, yes, the vaccine ended my season 100%. Goodwin said that the NBA told him to keep quiet about it, which is a whole other story. There is a media blackout concerning the deaths and adverse reactions to this vaccine. YouTube announced at the end of September that it will take down any video that questions any medically approved vaccine. They have removed already over 1 million videos. So apparently they believe it is for the greater good that these stories are not told. Are they sure of that? Or will they someday have egg on their face? Just like last year, social media companies banned the Wuhan lab leak man-made COVID-19 theory until the evidence became so overwhelming that they had to change their position. Well, the same might happen in their banning of these vaccine stories. Imagine just for a minute, if the nightly news ran the story about Jessica Wilson, age 37, dying of the vaccine, being pressured by the state to take the vaccine and then dying. And then the next night, running the story, a full featured story about Jeremy Chardy. And then the next night, another full featured story about Brandon Goodwin. Even if these stories represent the minority, could not the media, if it wanted to, make these stories the lead story? What would happen? Well, there would be a dramatic drop in the number of people willing to take these vaccines, and these pharmaceutical companies and the Biden administration would be in the panic mode. But if the media ran stories every night about unvaccinated people dying of COVID-19, that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, which they're currently doing, many more people will run out and get the vaccine. So my point is this, regardless of what you think of all this, this is a real reminder of how much power the media has over the minds of the American people, over our minds. They can make or break any government policy depending on how they want to report it. As has been pointed out before, COVID-19 will be over when the media says it's over. So the way the media is reporting the story now is that mass vaccinations are the solution to the COVID problem. Now, normally, vaccines or any medicine that has resulted in this level of death and adverse reaction would be taken off the market. But we're dealing with COVID hysteria. And as I addressed last week, our society is applying the ungodly philosophy of utilitarianism, the ends justify the means, that it's okay to have sacrificial lambs dying of the vaccine for the greater good of the society, rather than the Christian philosophy of preserving life and looking for other alternatives. Here's an interesting story in regard to this bias and cover-up. The Biden administration is planning to have the government agency OSHA enforce a workplace safety regulation requiring every company that has more than 100 employees to require COVID vaccination. Now, in the past, OSHA has required companies to report any negative effects that employees may experience from OSHA rulings. And in regard to these vaccines, OSHA has been requiring any company that requires the vaccine to report any adverse reaction in the employees. Now, this was only if companies require the vaccine. If companies only recommend the vaccine, they don't have to report. You know, once you require it, you're legally liable. But last week, OSHA changed its policy in preparation for this new federal government enforced mandate. Companies no longer are required to track adverse reaction to the vaccine. The government doesn't want those cases reported. Article from the Federalist. OSHA isn't tracking COVID vaccine side effects because it doesn't want to undermine Biden's shot campaign. So something very bizarre is going on here. There is a suppression of negative news about these vaccines, and one cannot help conclude that this phenomenon is coming from two sources. First, again, this philosophy of the ends justify the means. I mean, that's really philosophical, but I believe that is the mindset undergirding most government policy today in regard to abortion, open borders, deficit spending, and these vaccines. The higher law of nature and nature's God is not considered. God-given human rights are not considered. The only thing that matters is what these leaders judge to be politically expedient. Now, the second and the more obvious reason for this cover-up may be follow the money. The amount of money being made by these pharmaceutical companies. I mean, let's not be naive. There is a huge profit motive to mandate these vaccines, to get those under 18 years of age also vaccinated. These companies want to keep the money flowing. And if you know anything about marketing in the media, these companies use marketing companies to plant stories in the media to bury their competition and to sell their products. When you read a story in the media, always be suspicious. Here's a quote from the periodical The American Thinker. Is the COVID crisis merely the greatest grift ever perpetrated by the pharmaceutical industry and the politicians paid handsomely from its profits? I begin to really appreciate the quality of writing and the insights in The American Thinker. You may want to check that out. So now Pfizer is pushing vaccines for children 5 to 12. On Tuesday, the FDA approved the use of these vaccines on young children. But even before the FDA approved these vaccines for the children, the Biden administration already purchased from Pfizer those vaccines. Here's an article from ABC. Biden administration buys 65 million Pfizer pediatric vaccine doses. That's more than enough to fully vaccinate all 28 million U.S. children in that age group with a two-shot regimen. Federal officials say that at least 31,000 providers have been enrolled to administer the vaccines to children. Here's an article from U.S. News. Biden administration details COVID-19 vaccine plan for kids 5 to 11 ahead of authorization. With the release of the plan, the White House appears to be doubling down on its strategy of announcing distribution proposals without agency authorizations in hand. So for these politicians, regardless of the medical science, regardless of the authorization from the FDA, they have already made up their minds ideologically what must be done in order to save everyone from COVID. It's already a done deal. Here's an article from CBS. FDA weighs the risk of myocarditis in review of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines for kids 5 to 11. The Food and Drug Administration said Friday, it concluded the overall benefit of Pfizer's COVID-19 for children 5 to 11 years old may still outweigh the risks after the agency estimated that in most scenarios, the vaccine could prevent more COVID-19 hospitalizations in young children than cause a serious side effect linked to the vaccine. So the FDA is making a calculated risk. Will the vaccine help or hurt more children? Also, this article, FDA panel approves Pfizer COVID vax for kids age 5 to 11. It concedes it doesn't know the long-term risks to children. One actually has to go to non-mainstream sites like Gateway Pundit to get those quotes from the FDA. Well, think about this. It's a scientific fact that COVID-19 does not affect children adversely. This is not polio. This is not the Spanish influenza. This is not even like measles or chickenpox. And there are no super spreading events or serious outbreaks in public schools. And the vaccine manufacturers even admit that adults and children can still carry the virus even after being fully vaccinated. Now, according to the CDC, the number of child deaths related to COVID-19, ages 0 to 4, have been 195. In ages 5 to 18, there has been 442. And almost in all of these children, they already had other serious medical problems. And the number of children dying every year from the flu is higher than the COVID-19 deaths. And in an FDA fact sheet, it's revealed that 86% of children who participated in the Pfizer COVID vaccine trial reported adverse reactions ranging from mild to serious. When this vaccine is administered to children ages 5 to 11 years old, it's a fact that some of the children will die and some of the children will be disabled, just like it's happened to adults. Will it be 50? Will it be 100? We don't know. Will it be greater or less than those who have died or been disabled by COVID? But why vaccinate children when children are not being affected by this disease and the benefit of the vaccines are both unnecessary and not lasting? Just like the masking of elementary school children. The masks have been proven to be almost negligible in preventing the spread of COVID, but children are still forced to wear masks. Notice how the CDC and the media are inconsistent in this policy. Let me show you two videos. First, 3 months ago, if you are fully vaccinated, the CDC said children do not need to wear masks in school.
A move by the CDC today that could pave the way for a close to normal learning experience for many children when school starts this year. The CDC issued new guidelines today saying students, teachers, and staff who are fully vaccinated will not need to wear masks in school beginning this fall. The move in part to encourage more children to get vaccinated. This comes as there's confusion over possible booster shots to limit the spread of the Delta variant. Pfizer asking for the government's approval of a booster shot, but right now officials say that is not necessary.
But now that people are being fully vaccinated, the report this week, CDC says if vaccinated, you still need to wear masks.
Dr. Jen Ashton here. With medical updates for inquiring viewers, we have your questions. First one, Dr. Jen, should vaccinated children still wear masks in school?
Well, listen, I think this is a really important example. We have to follow the CDC recommendations and the American Academy of Pediatric recommendations. And right now, we've heard the CDC director say, yes, they should. Children 2 years of age and over should still wear masks in a classroom setting, even when they start to be vaccinated, which we're expecting for children ages 5 through 11 soon.
So it sure looks like they make this stuff up as they go along based upon their ideological feelings concerning what should be done. Did you hear this story? A surgeon in Minnesota was terminated after he spoke up at a school board meeting stating that masks on children are not really necessary. You know, many medical experts have already said this, but the powers to be at that hospital have caught COVID hysteria. Hundreds rallied outside the hospital protesting his firing. Bet you didn't hear that story in the nightly news. You know, these COVID hysteria ideologues are real totalitarians. Did you hear about a senior advisor to the Governor Murphy reelection campaign? She was caught on camera saying that once Murphy is reelected, then he will push for more mandates. But what I found really interesting was the statement from this advisor, where she said with vitriol that unvaccinated people are killing people. There's no real science on that. That's just the worldview she has chosen to believe. Here's a news clip from ABC World News Tonight, talking about the vaccination of children. Watch it, and then tell me what's missing from the story.
New shot of hope for children in this pandemic. Moderna announcing the results of their latest study, finding that it was safe and effective in children 6 to 11 years old. The company says their child vaccine is a half dose of the adult vaccine, administered in two shots 28 days apart. Tomorrow, an FDA advisory panel will review Pfizer's vaccine for children 5 to 11 years old. It could clear the FDA and the CDC by the first week of November. And when it does, the Biden administration says there will be millions of doses ready to go. Here's ABC's Ariel Reshef.
Just one day before an FDA panel is set to review and rule on Pfizer's vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds, promising news tonight on Moderna's vaccine in younger children. The company reporting a strong immune response in kids 6 to 11.
Oh, that doesn't hurt at all.
At just one half the adult dose, two shots given 28 days apart produced 1.5 times the antibodies seen in young adults. And like Pfizer, Moderna says its vaccine was safe in the younger group with mild side effects like headache, sore arm, fever, and fatigue.
As pediatricians who care for these kids, we want to find a solution, and it is a miracle that we potentially have one.
28 million children could be eligible for a Pfizer shot as early as Thursday, November 4th, after an expected green light from the FDA and CDC. The Pfizer vaccine found to be nearly 91% effective in 5 to 11-year-olds. Pediatrician Amanda Dropick enrolled all four of her children in the Pfizer trial.
If it's something that I can prevent with a vaccine that's both safe and effective, that's my job, to protect my kids and other people's kids to the best of my ability.
11-year-old Eli and 9-year-old Lila say they'll encourage their friends to get vaccinated.
They should definitely get vaccinated, and it really doesn't hurt, and it's definitely worth it, even if you do get a few side effects.
So did you catch what was missing? An opinion from a pediatrician that children need to be vaccinated, an opinion from a mom that children need to be vaccinated, and they even had the gall to give the advice of the children that other children need to be vaccinated. That's really authoritative. But there was not one contrary opinion from any physician or group concerning possible harm to children given this vaccine. They could easily find, out of thousands of pediatricians, someone who would warn that these vaccines are too risky for children. The old Walter Cronkite method of interviewing people on both sides of the argument is not being applied. So this really isn't news. This is, in effect, a pharmaceutical commercial for vaccinating children. Let's also remember in all this that these vaccines are not living up to their promise. It may be one thing if these vaccines worked, like measles vaccine or the polio vaccine, but these vaccines only offer short-term protection. Here's a CNBC article. Researchers found the effectiveness of Pfizer vaccines against Delta variant infections was 93% a month after the second dose and fell to 53% after 4 months. And if you look at how these pharmaceutical companies came up with these original claims that these vaccines were 99% effective, you would see that it was all guesswork based on small sample sizes and short-term results. These vaccines were rushed to market. And at the beginning of the summer, we all saw these stories that 99% of those in hospitals with COVID were unvaccinated. As in this U.S. news story, the same story is picked up and circulated by the media. But the report has since been completely discredited. It was just one isolated hospital. Breakthrough cases, people with COVID who have gotten the vaccine, are now making up 40% of hospitalizations. Newsweek article, at the beginning of September, over 14,000 people with breakthrough cases have been hospitalized or died. And this article concerning Robert Redfield, former director of the CDC, said last week, a lot of times people may feel it's a rare event that fully vaccinated people die. I happen to be the senior advisor to Governor Hogan in the state of Maryland. In the last 6 to 8 weeks, more than 40% of the people who died of COVID in Maryland were fully vaccinated. Here's an interesting montage put together by some Twitter user, flashing articles and statements from the beginning of the year promising the vaccine's effectiveness and then showing the decline. It's an interesting montage.
So now we have two vaccines that are really quite effective.
The mRNA vaccine, highly effective.
Extraordinarily efficacious, 94 to 95% for mild to moderate disease and virtually 100% efficacious.
Because the real world effectiveness is even more impressive than the results of the clinical trial.
Why aren't these vaccines working well? Well, first, the vaccines do not target all of the proteins of the virus, but just one protein on the shell of the virus. And this is why when you get the virus, the natural immunity is so much stronger. And the second reason for these vaccines failing is that the common cold is a form of coronavirus, and they've never been able to come up with a vaccine or a cure for the common cold. Because our body doesn't develop permanent immunities against these forms of viruses like it does the measles or polio. With the current science, there is going to be no permanent vaccine against COVID-19. And that's the truth. Now, here I have to add a caveat. If you've gotten the shot, you're not a bad person. But just don't buy into the narrative that there is no risk in the vaccine, or that once you've gotten the vaccine, you're immune from the virus. that original propaganda has been totally discredited. And if you do get the booster shot, just realize you're probably going to have to get it again in 6 months because it doesn't last. The chairman of Moderna just said in an interview that yearly booster shots may be required, which of course will be great for their bottom line. If there are truly side effects to this new mRNA technology, with continual booster shots, with continual vaccination, it's going to become evident to all. It'll be interesting to see. So because of all the things I've mentioned, there is a huge vaccine mandate resistance movement. This is also underreported. This was originally going to be the topic for today's program, but there was so much else to discuss. But let me just do a flyover here. The state of Arizona is asking the courts for a restraining order for Biden's administration vaccine mandates from the state's attorney general. The COVID-19 vaccine mandate is one of the greatest infringements upon individual liberty, federalism, and the separation of powers by any administration in our country's history. Also, this story, nearly 1,900 Washington state employees quit or are fired over COVID-19 vaccine mandate. And this story, Minnesota hospital shuts down ER and urgent care amid nurse strike. And in Brooklyn, anti-vaccine mandate protesters showed up at the Barclays Center protesting the fact that NBA player Kyrie Irving is not allowed to play because he's not been vaccinated. Remember the complete collapse of Southwestern Airlines, their flights a couple of weeks ago? It was because the airline workers were calling in sick to protest Southwest's vaccine mandate. Now, no one was admitting it was a protest, because to not show up for work, if you work for the airlines, if you're doing it out of protest, is actually illegal. So it was all hush-hush, but the management knew. And since then, the company has backed down on the mandate. Half the Chicago police force, with the backing of the union, is refusing to get vaccinated. They're in a showdown with Lori Lightfoot, the mayor. And this hasn't been reported, but it's not just the police, but it's other city workers. Well, Chicago has had to back down on the mandates. Here's an article. Chicago public schools will relax its employee COVID vaccine mandate. Unvaccinated employees can continue working even after Friday's COVID-19 vaccine mandate deadline if they take a weekly coronavirus test. Well, the same thing is also happening in New York City. The police don't want to be forced to be vaccinated. There was a large anti-mandate protest in New York City this week by city workers. The governor of Florida, DeSantis, made a great statement recently. He said no one should lose their job over these vaccines. And DeSantis is inviting any police officer who has been laid off due to state mandates to come down to Florida to work. DeSantis will give them a job in the police force and a $5,000 bonus. And mayors and governors in blue states hate this because they can't afford to lose police officers. You remember that the walls in communism is not to keep people from getting in, but to keep people from getting out. There's a great lesson here in God's providential protection judgment. God protects his people with other civic leaders. That's Ecclesiastes chapter 5. If you see the oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there's a higher official over them. In other words, there's always another city to flee to. You can vote with your feet and put yourself under the authority of a righteous civil leader. And notice that at the very moment the left is pushing for these mandates, our country is experiencing something that we've never experienced before. There are not enough workers to fill jobs. And so these blue states, to their own destruction, are laying off unvaccinated employees that they cannot afford to lose. The economic situation couldn't come at a worse time for these politicians who want to marginalize conservatives and fire them from their jobs. And this is Pastor Brad's, let's call it Pastor Brad's principle number 41. When the world shoots at their opponents out the front door, they've got their own problems running in their back door. Well, there's plenty more that needs to be said about the resistance movement, but I'm running out of time here. Let's look at some scripture on this. What are the spiritual lessons? What's God trying to teach us? Well, what I've been saying since this whole pandemic began is that the public is going to learn that the scientists and the politicians are not going to save us. In this case, history will show that they made the situation worse. In the Spanish influenza in the United States, 1819, historians will tell you that when it was all done, the American people lost their faith in the politicians and in the scientists, because in that day, all of their policies also failed. Here's an article even from Vox. The most important lesson of the 1918 influenza pandemic: tell the damn truth. The government lied. They lied about everything. A historian on what went wrong in 1918. Well, history has repeated itself, and it's even worse. Now, yes, we do realize that God does raise up governments and godly kings to save people from harm, but not in all cases. In this case, it looks like God's judgment brought on by microbiologists in Wuhan and furthered by the hysteria of social leaders thinking they have all the solution. So in this case, I think Psalm 146:3 applies. Do not trust in princes, in mortal men, in whom there is no salvation. And Psalm 118 verse 8 applies. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. Or 2 Chronicles 16:12, in the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet. His disease was severe, yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but the physicians. Is there anything wrong with physicians? No, even the Apostle Paul took along with him Luke the physician. But when a nation is given over to humanism, when men boast that they're in charge and they can fix everything, not understanding the proper limitations of man, that underlying attitude always makes for bad policy. The only thing that's going to stop this virus is for the virus to run its course. Not that we do nothing, but those who act in pride always make matters worse. Here's a quote from a seasoned journalist. He writes in Substack. He makes the point, quote, "This is going to sound crazy. Government strategies have made no difference to the spread of this highly contagious, but only moderately dangerous respiratory disease," unquote. Well, if you can just hold on here, I have three final lessons. Each of these lessons could actually deserve an entire YouTube. But first, recognize that when the church is persecuted, it's always indirect. It's never, you believe in the inspiration of the Bible, you believe in the deity of Christ, so we're going to fire you from your job. No, as it was in ancient Rome, it's because you look like an enemy of the state, or because you're falsely accused of burning down Rome. It would be so much easier if the persecution was direct, if it was against our confession of faith. But Satan and the world are so much more subtle. They get you by gaslighting you, by claiming that you're the problem on some peripheral issue. Even in Revelation chapter 13, the mark of the beast, you will not be denied food because you believe in Christ. You're persecuted simply because you do not identify with the kingdom of the Antichrist. You won't take the mark. So the Christians I speak with are saying that they never thought that they would lose their job over this vaccine. They thought it would be over their faith in Christ. Is this something they should really fall on the sword for? Well, remember, even in the most intense persecution of the church, it will always be subtle, and it will always be tangentially associated with our faith in Christ. A second lesson. Stand up for what is right against the majority. I recently read a famous psychological study where an individual was shown a group of lines, and it was asked which one of these lines is the same length as a separate line. There were other participants in the room who were asked the same question, and they all agreed together on the right answer. But these other participants were plants. And after a while, they were prepped to start saying the wrong answer was the right answer. Now, the individual in this test would soon start to go along with the wrong answer because for most people, they would rather be wrong and get the approval of the group than to be right and be considered wrong by the group. And that's the way many people are in their moral lives. They do not stand up for what's right. If they're told to do something that is useless and ridiculous, they'll go along to get along. Because it's hard to stand up against the spirit of the age, to stand up against groupthink, to stand up against a mass psychosis. Notice this story. A UCLA doctor, willing to lose everything, was escorted from the medical facility for refusing COVID vaccine. He said the following. This is what happens when you stand up for freedom and you show up to work. Willing to work despite being unvaccinated, this is the price you have to pay sometimes. What they don't realize is that I'm willing to lose everything. Job, paycheck, freedom, even my life for this cause. Well, if this doctor was willing to suffer such loss to do what is right concerning this vaccine, how much more should we stand up for Christ? The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Mark Robinson, was recently recorded saying at Asbury Baptist Church in Seagrove, North Carolina, quote, "There is no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any child about transgenderism, homosexuality, or any of that filth." And yes, I call it filth. And if you don't like it that I call it filth, come see me about it. The congregation applauded. Well, of course, the LGBT community went into action, trying to cancel the lieutenant governor. And he responded this way. "We will not be intimidated. We will not back down. We will not change our language. The language I used, I will not be ashamed of it. I will use it in the future because, again, it's time for parents in this state to take a strong stand for their children." So good for him. While most politicians run for cover, apologize, step down, Mark Robinson helps us all by taking a stand, which encourages others to take a stand. That's Philippians 1:14. "And that most of the brethren trust in the Lord because of my imprisonment have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear." Because some take a stand, it encourages others to take a stand. And that's why there's a media blackout on vaccine mandate resistance. But the word is getting out. I mean, you can't silence 43% of the population who's refusing to get the vaccine. My third lesson is to be patient and to wait. Those who are right will always be vindicated, and those who are wrong will always be put to shame. Isaiah chapter 54, verse 17, "No weapon that is formed against you will prosper, and every tongue that accuses you in judgment, you will condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their vindication is from me, declares the Lord." The long-term effects of current COVID policy will eventually come to light. And I'll pick up that subject next week. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening today. Check out my website, godandcountryradio.org. If you email me, I will send you a weekly email with the links and the description of the current program. You know, eventually we're not going to be able to depend upon YouTube subscriptions to remind listeners of new programming. But nevertheless, for now, still subscribe, share, like, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.